$34.1 million. That was the opening day box office total for the final installment in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which came to theaters earlier this week.
It's so quiet.
It's the deep breath before the plunge.
I don't want to be in a battle. But waiting on the edge of one I can't escape is even worse. Is there any hope, Gandalf, for Frodo and Sam?
There never was much hope. Just a fool's hope.
Before Ian McKellen donned his robes as Gandalf the Wizard in the Lord of the Rings film trilogy, he was already celebrated, especially in his native England, as one of the most versatile and gifted actors of his generation. Most of McKellen's work has been on the British stage in classical theater. His best-known stage role in America was as Salieri in the original Broadway production of Amadeus. His film work, prior to his role in the blockbuster Lord of the Rings series, consisted mainly of roles in smaller films, such as Scandal, and The Band Played On, 6 Degrees of Separation, and Gods and Monsters. 15 years ago, at the age of 49, McKellen publicly came out. It was, in part, a reaction against an English law passed in 1988 prohibiting the publication of materials that promoted homosexuality. McKellen was knighted 3 years after coming out. When Terry spoke with Ian McKellen in 1994, she asked him if he was surprised to be knighted.
Yes, frankly, I was. I think I was the first openly gay person to receive an honour in Britain, and I took that as a slightly hopeful sign that maybe the world was beginning to grow up at last. I was happy to accept it as an actor because it put me, nominally at least, in the company of people I've admired all my life, like Sir Laurence Olivier and Sir John Gielgud and so on. But as an activist, which by that time I was, I knew in class-conscious Britain to be a knight was a very useful handle. And it meant that certain doors would open because I would have some social clout. And so it's proved. And it just means that government ministers, people right up at that level, are much more likely to answer a letter personally if it's on paper which is headed Sir Ian McKellen, than one that just comes from that actor, Johnny, who I don't really know who he is. It just changed their attitude subtly, but crucially, I found.
What were your big fears about coming out, and did any of them come true?
I think what had always been a barrier to my coming out was the sense that no one would cast me, for example, as Romeo, if they knew that in my private life it was Mercutio I fancied rather than Juliet. And that is, I know a lot of actors feel that if their audiences were to know that they were gay, somehow it would limit their possibilities of work. That really hasn't proved the case to me, but at 49 I was well established, and in fact I've had more work than ever, particularly in films, playing, as I always have done, heterosexuals as well as homosexuals. So if that was the fear, it was, in my case, an ungrounded one. But the real fear was nothing to do with my career at all. It was, as I've been saying, the great pressure that's put on gays and lesbians, whatever job they do, to keep quiet and shut up and go away and stay tight shut in the closet. And it takes a great deal of will to realize that you're taking on the world by coming out.
Do you think it affected your acting at all to have something very important and very personal that you had to hide from so many people?
It's difficult for me to assess, but critics and friends say that I am a better actor. One of the reasons I became an actor was feeling inhibited about expressing that part of myself, my sexuality, in public and private quite openly. I was able on stage to indulge my passions and be very open about them and draw attention to them. And that's why I think so many lesbians and gay people who are closeted privately are on stage extremely passionate. I suppose, therefore, it might have been that when I reached the stage in which I was open about this very important part of myself, there would be no need for me to be an actor anymore, personally. And I think actually that is true. I find as much satisfaction from my work as an activist and my getting close to the power structure in the United Kingdom to the extent of being able just to add my weight to changing those laws which discriminate against me and other people.
Hmm.
That to me is as rewarding as any performing I've done on a public stage. However, I mustn't stop acting, because it's only actually as a gay actor that I think I can be effective as a gay activist. I don't want to become a full-time politician. And actually, I'm so at ease with myself now, and that is the big advantage of coming out. There is nothing I'm frightened of anymore. That, of course, my acting has got to have improved, and because I'm prepared to go into every corner of my nature and my personality and apply it and put it at the service of whatever fictional character I'm playing.
You grew up in small towns in England, and I believe your first exposure to the theatre was travelling theatre groups. What were they like?
I was a theatre girl long before I was an actor, and long before I intended to be a professional actor. And I was very lucky to see a wide variety of theatre. I saw John Gielgud on tour playing King Lear. I used to go down to Stratford-upon-Avon in the 1950s and see the great actors, Olivier, Charles Laughton, Paul Robeson, Edith Evans, Peggy Ashcroft in Shakespeare. I used to see variety theatre, vaudeville, which was still just standing up in England in the 40s and 50s, and at very close quarters, sometimes backstage. I used to visit these artists of various sorts, whether they were animal acts, conjurers, comedians, singers, and that world of stand-up comic has affected my interest in doing my own solo show, and some of it is deliberately uses the techniques of those people who perhaps I admire more than any other sort of performer, who can bravely stand on an open stage and entertain 1,000 or 2,000 people for a couple of hours. I think people who do that regularly for a living and for whom most of their material is designed to make an audience laugh must be the most exposing experience a performer can have, and those who bring it off, I think, have my admiration more than any others.
So you had the courage when you were young to go backstage and meet the people who were performing?
Well, I was very lucky. My father knew a man who owned a theatre, and that's how it happened. And so I, at a very early age, I was intrigued with the glamour of that secret which performers have, that they know what goes on backstage, and they create what goes on stage. And when they step out of the darkness into the light, something magical happens, you know, that the henpecked husband suddenly becomes the man of total confidence. The slightly dowdy person dressed up in sequins and a bit of makeup on their face suddenly on stage becomes the most glamorous person in the world. And I wonder now, looking back, whether that didn't appeal to me, because I was in a dark world of being gay, and yet on stage I was able to step out into the light on my own terms and attract the audience's attention and approval.
When you came to the classical theatre from small towns in England, were there things you had to change about yourself for the theatre? Things in either your carriage or your diction?
Yes, it's to me a fascinating study that perhaps one day I should try and formalize into a book or something. But theatre acting, any acting, is about disguise, and at the same time, it is about absolute honesty. The characters one plays are not oneself, but they have within them aspects of oneself. And you're only ever going to be convincing as, let's say, Macbeth, if you examine that part of your nature which is so ambitious that you would be prepared to commit murder for your own self-advancement. You have to be able to imagine what that would be like and therefore look deep, deep into yourself. Now, that is being extremely honest in a way that most people are not required to be honest in their work. And at the same time, you are disguising because you are not Macbeth, nor do you speak in blank verse, which he does. And when I was a young man, I thought as an actor, it would be limiting to be vocally, for instance, identifiable as someone from the north of England, and so I got rid of my northern accent to a great extent and spoke received pronunciation English. And I rather regret I did that, because I think probably on the whole there was no need to do it. An actor should have two sort of accents, perhaps, their own, their native one, and then something of a more general nature which they can use where it's applicable. But when I started out acting, I thought all actors should only speak with a bland, received pronunciation.
I'd like to talk with you about your acting career. First of all, you really haven't done many movies. Most of your career has been on the stage, mostly the English stage, but some on Broadway as well, and Amadeus, for instance. Has it been a conscious choice to not do movies, or is that something you would have liked to do more of?
Thank you. That's a very kind and discreet way of putting it. I've spent my life trying to get into movies, and and here I am. The trouble is, with acting in the theatre, and it's about the only disadvantage, is that it does cut you off from a great many other things, including a stable family life, I must say. I mean, it's absolutely absorbing, and it's almost a 24-hour job. And long contracts and long runs make it very, very difficult to suddenly at the last minute nip off and do movies, which on the whole are cast at the last minute and you're not given much warning. And the only way to really try and have an established movie career, it seems to me, is to refuse to do the theatre for a spell. And rather late in the day, that's what I decided to do after I'd finished the United States tour of Richard III, when we landed up in Los Angeles. I said, right, that's it. Of late in the theatre, I've been increasingly working in small theatres. I suppose that all began when I did Macbeth for the Royal Shakespeare Company in 1978 in a very small theatre indeed, perhaps 120 people scattered around a circular stage area. And since then, I've realised that that's really how I like to work. And film is an extension, of course, because that's a more intimate form of acting still.
So what are you having to learn doing more movies?
I'm not having to learn in the extent of unlearn bad habits. That's not the point. Acting in the theatre is a question of selecting what you want the audience to receive, because an audience sitting a long way away in the balcony will depend on very clear messages from the stage in gesture and in exaggerated body language and vocal technique. They need to have the character presented to them. I'm more interested in having that relationship where an audience selects for themselves from what is on offer, and that means they have to be very close. They have to be able to see the flicker of the eye. They have to be able to see the thought behind the face and the body, and that means that in front of the camera, I don't select, I just exist, I am, and that is a different technique of acting, though, of course, the process of preparing for it is very much like what you go through when you're rehearsing for a play.
Sir Ian McKellen, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Sir Ian McKellen, star of the new Lord of the Rings movie, The Return of the King. McKellen was knighted for his stage and film work, which includes on Broadway the role of Salieri in Amadeus. He also appeared in the movies Scandal and The Band Played On, Gods and Monsters, The X-Men, and, a few weeks ago, played himself in cartoon form on The Simpsons. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. WHYY's executive producer of national radio programming is Elizabeth Perez Luna. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bianculli.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by the Sundance Channel, presenting the New Voices Film Fest this month, with films by emerging new directors, Saturdays at 9 p.m., listings at sundancechannel.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.